You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the trust you put in people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson.
Now tell me about this pigeon website you go to.
It's Hacker Safe.
It's Hacker Safe?
Yeah.
So there's a logo on the site that says it's Hacker Safe. Do you think that's really Hacker Safe?
I think so.
No.
Do you think your dad could hack it?
Do you think I could hack it?
I don't know. I think my dad can or I don't know.
That's because he's going in like a super hacker.
That's right. I'm super hacker, right?
Yeah.
Yep. You know all about hackers, don't you?
Yeah.
Yep.
I said I want to dress up as a hacker this Halloween.
You're going to dress up? Really? Oh,
yeah.
All right.
The preceding PSA was brought to you by Security Justice. Remember, people teach them young before it's too late.
Welcome to episode 282 of the Shared Security Podcast. And joining me this week are my two sensational co-hosts, Scott Wright and Kevin Johnson.
Sensational.
Sensational. I never want to doubt the great Tom Esten.
Stop.
I just wanna I never want to at all imply that I doubt you. What episode are we on?
This is 282. Yeah. Why I know the URL says
okay, 281. Okay, I'm just making sure. I'm like, wait, I don't understand. Okay,
I made a mistake, but it is 282.
I must have made the mistake.
The last episode was 281, which was with the great Philip Wiley.
Yeah,
so
it was a good episode.
That was
a good episode.
Great interview I had with him. So check that out if you haven't already.
Yeah. And this episode's a palindrome.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I love palindromes.
I know you do. I know you do, Kevin. But before we get started on our stories for this week, I did want to make an announcement that this news has been out for a little bit, but it has not actually been announced on the podcast. So I think it's appropriate that I announce it on the podcast, but you can now become an official supporter of the Shared Security Podcast. So for only $5 a month. Now that's cheaper than a coffee at Starbucks these days. Maybe not a coffee, like a tall, regular coffee.
I was going to say, I don't think I bought one.
Huh. Extra whatever latte, let's just say that, right? But with that $5, you get early access to all new episodes that come out.
Nice.
Access to our supporter only ad free podcast feed, which is pretty cool. And then access to our supporter only Discord server, so you can yell at Kevin whenever you want.
You can, because I'm in there.
I know. That is an amazing value. Just right.
I don't know
alone.
About that. I don't
yes,
know about that.
I think it is.
I will
Wait,
say
I have a question for you, Tom.
If I may add mine.
But I'm not
quick.
Done with what this $5 includes.
Nice, so, really? That's amazing.
Yeah, there's two more things. So you get a monthly supporter shout out on the podcast.
Okay.
And
okay.
Finally, you get a discount code for 15% off of all merch in the Shared Security store.
Yeah. Nice. And the merch is good because I've ordered some this weekend. The table parts got delivered. I'm setting up all my workbenches, and the Shared Security sticker is going on the workbenches.
Yes.
Along with the Professional Evil ones. I will say, for anybody who's worried about it, due to my known instability about not getting mad at things, I have no control over what Tom and the Shared Security Podcast does with the money that it raises. So you don't have to worry about me using it to target Comcast or something. It is completely under Tom's good, strong, financially, fiscally responsible hands.
Well, let me tell you what the money is used for. It's not going to some anti-corporation fund. I assure you that. But will be used to pay for web hosting, editing.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, ensuring that we continue to bring you all the great content and that you come to expect every week on this show. So now I'll take questions.
Amazing.
What's your question, Scott?
Oh, you just said it was going to be ad-free. Does that mean we have to cut out the Aware Much segment of every show?
No, the Aware Much is still in there.
Oh, okay.
That's not an ad. Mm-hmm. That's a sponsor.
That's not an ad.
Okay.
That's right.
Yep.
No, it's funny. I thought the same thing. I was like, wait a minute. Because that article, like, all seriousness, and I'm not arguing for or against ads or anything else like that. I personally don't mind ads because I have a fast forward button. But I would not consider your segment an ad. Well, yes, you mention ClickArmor and stuff like that. You always bring an article that's relevant and important, and like it's actually content, in my opinion. Right.
Right.
Like unlike like when you're watching a YouTube video and they're like Surfshark or whatever crappy sponsorship thing they have. Right. Those are ads. That's my opinion, and I don't know.
I appreciate that, Kevin.
Yeah, no problem, man.
It's kind of like watching the hockey game with the logos on the boards. You can't really take the boards away when you're, anyway.
Yes. So if you would like to support the show for $5 a month, you can go to sharedsecurity.net/patron or patreon.com/sharedsecurity. And we'll have that linked here in the show notes. Or if you're watching this video on YouTube, we'll have the link in YouTube as well. So thank you for your support.
Great.
Much appreciated. That's awesome.
Okay. I know we have lots of topics. I've already spiraled us out of control before the show started.
Oh my.
But you have completely confused me. What is a board in hockey? I thought those were sticks.
You know, the boards that keep you from losing the puck, or the boards that you get hit into by other players?
You mean the wall?
Yeah, they call it the boards.
Oh, okay. Oh. I thought you meant like the hockey stick was called a board. And I was like, what do you mean take away the board? I don't know.
I call that a wall, but okay.
That's what I thought, like the wall.
You should go to a Panthers game once in a while. I don't know.
Is that the Florida ice hockey team?
It is. Well, there's two. There's the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Okay. I don't mean to be rude. I don't expect quality skills from a Florida ice hockey team. They may be awesome.
Las Vegas. Las Vegas is in the championship right now, right?
Yeah. Las Vegas is about to win.
Yes.
Yeah.
For ice hockey.
They got a really good hockey team, actually. Yeah.
And Tampa Bay has won several Stanley Cups. If you knew what a Stanley Cup was, that might mean something to you. But
isn't that the trophy, like the championship trophy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So we talk about security, Tom?
Yeah, we probably should. I think now we'll move on to security stuff. Cool. All right. Well, our first story, the Federal Trade Commission has charged home security camera company Ring, which you all know is owned by Amazon, with compromising customer privacy and failing to implement adequate privacy and security measures. So we've talked about these incidents on this show before, right? You remember when all those Ring cameras got hacked? Do you remember when all the videos were being reviewed by Ring employees and all of this stuff? Well, all of that finally caught up to them, and the FTC is making them pay $5.8 million in customer refunds and also mandates deletion of data. So before, like I think pre-2018 customer videos and face embeddings, and then of course they have to put together a security and privacy program, which I think they've done that. I mean,
I better reach out to them.
And then it really gets around. It always talks about the lack of two-factor authentication, if you remember as well, which is one of the reasons. So, well, what do you guys think of this?
I wonder if this, you know, they get fined $5 million. Sounds like a lot, right?
Well,
not for Amazon.
Well, they're not fined.
Am I correct that it wasn't that they were fined?
Yeah.
They have to give back that money because they promised stuff that they didn't deliver. Like,
yes,
they promised to secure. So that money is going to actual users, unlike
customer refunds. Okay. I see.
Many times, and the confusion is like the Federal Trade Commission very often does fine an organization, and that money goes to the FTC, and they use that however they use that. But in this case, I wasn't aware. Is there also a fine attached? I don't recall.
The fine may
one.
Just go to contribute to the refunds, or maybe the amount of
maybe,
the refunds.
Maybe.
But I'm also wondering if this was a real privacy breach, is it likely to have a GDPR impact?
Is Ring in Europe?
That's a good question.
I don't think it is.
For some reason, I think they're not. I don't know that I'm right. But I think they're not.
Can you buy rings in Canada?
Oh, yeah. I got one.
Okay. Oh, well, okay. That's interesting.
But GDPR doesn't cover Canada, right?
No.
Yeah, but you guys have Canada
does have privacy laws, right?
We do have privacy laws, but I don't know of anything that's going against them right now. But
I would imagine very often when we see things like this, when one federal agency in the U.S. goes after an organization, quite often we then see the EU do it, or vice versa, right? Like Canada goes after a company, and then the Federal Trade Commission.
I just
announces.
Wonder if it did happen to fall under GDPR, it could be a much bigger fine, right?
Yeah,
sure.
Well, and the question I would have at that point is, GDPR is based on, percent of revenue. Is that Amazon revenue or Ring's revenue or, right? Like, those are some big numbers.
They are.
Let me go back to the question Tom asked. Like, what do you think? I don't know. And here's why I say that. I don't know what I think about anything. I'm an idiot. We know I'm an idiot.
But thanks for tuning in, folks.
Yeah. That's all we have for this week. Definitive answer. What the hell? On one hand, this is exactly what the Federal Trade Commission is supposed to do. They're supposed to go out, say, hey, U.S. citizens have been harmed because of a commercial organization not doing the right thing. Let's go after them. The reason I don't know is that aspect I like. And I really, really like the idea that it's like, hey, you did this thing wrong. You're going to have to make the users whole, not just money that goes to fund another government thing. I like that.
I like refunding. Yeah.
Yes. Too. Right. The issue I have is, and I don't know that this is a good example of it, but very, very often breaches happen and we attack one of the victims of the breach, the company. And I'm not saying, I want to be very clear, because I can totally see people saying that as like, oh, Kevin's protecting companies. The question I have is, was the breach here? And I think the answer is yes. Was the breach here because Ring was negligent? Not the judge decided they were negligent, but us, the experts that actually talked, would we think they were negligent? I think the answer is yes. Or is it that, like for example, if all of the breaches were because you had users that had weak passwords and stuff like that, I wouldn't consider that the company's fault, and I would be bothered by them being fined. In this case, my understanding from reading up in it is that they didn't offer controls they needed. And internally they were missing controls,
That's correct.
Which is bad. In those cases, I think this is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I hesitate to do a blanket. Yeah, go after company.
No, you're right.
Right? Like that's my only hesitation here is we've worked with companies. I mean, obviously we do. I'm a consultant. I work with companies all the time. And we've got companies who are doing their damnedest to be secure while still functioning. And they get breached. But then I have other customers who very often do not remain customers for long. We regularly say, no, we're not interested. Thank you very much. Go away. We have customers that they really just don't care. And I'm not saying all of their staff, right? But the company as a whole, right? You have these people come, they need a pen test, you find these problems. We just had this happen yesterday. We had a customer, they did a test, we found massive holes. They came back, they said, hey, we fixed everything. And we looked and nothing was actually fixed. And so now the question is, right, are you just not fixing it or do you really not understand, right? And I know that I've talked about this quite a bit. InfoSec, we are shiny object focused, right? Latest whiz bang thing is what we focus on. And so we very often set organizations up for failure because we have them focus on the latest vulnerability and not the basic fundamentals of things they should be fixing. Yeah. It sounds to me like Ring wasn't doing the basic fundamentals, in which case the fine is good. Yeah. Sue them out of existence.
Yeah. Right. I like to look at it from a slightly different perspective rather than trying to decide, did everything happen properly? Were they properly penalized and all that stuff? I look at more as a learning opportunity for us to say, okay, how could this have happened? And what could we do to try and make sure that, companies don't have this kind of thing happen in the future. And when I look at what's written here, it talks about Ring allowed employees and contractors unrestricted access to customer private videos. And when they mention contractors, that brings into the question the supply chain and the security policies and things like that. So, I mean, there could have been, you know, contractor had unrestricted access and wasn't really given any kind of training or enforcement measures or things like that. And maybe their stuff got compromised. It's just an example of the kind of things that might have led to this. I'm not saying it did, but just to say, you know, as a learning tool to say, yeah, look at this, the way this could have happened, given what they're talking about.
Yep. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. We'll see what the FTC does with, you know, other types of situations.
Yeah. Well, and this is, more. I think something to think about here is this is such an ingrained system that by its nature has access to private data.
Yes.
Right? Like there is no way you're going to roll out a Ring doorbell or camera or whatever and not have privacy concerns. Right. So, yeah, I think we're going to see, and there's lots and lots of things like that. So,
All right. Well, Scott, let's jump to our favorite segment, which is Aware Much.
Yes, Tom, this installment of Aware Much is brought to you by ClickArmor, the interactive security awareness platform. So is it fair to say that when you download apps from your favorite app store, that you expect the app to kind of behave the same from day to day?
You know,
but what happens if a company that published an app gets bought?
Oh. You know,
the new owner can apparently push any content that they want into the approved app. This seems to have happened with a company called iRecord, or an app called iRecord on the Google Play Store. And it's an app that would do screen recording on an Android device. But in fact, the app ended up loading malware onto devices, apparently because the company got bought or taken over or something. So it seems like we can't always trust apps that were once safe to remain that way. Is that what's happening?
Well, I like how this malware is called a rat. A-H-R-A-T.
Or is it a rat?
Yeah.
Depends on which syllable you emphasize.
Right. Yeah. And I think the other piece of this, which you're probably going to get to, is, you know, how do you know that you have possibly a malware infection on your mobile phone, right? Because of something like this that happens where, you know, and I mean, this could happen to any type of app that, you know, is, you know, bought or not, right? It could be, we've seen this before, like supply chain type attacks where the code base gets compromised and then malicious code gets pushed out to production. This has happened before. And how do you know is the question.
Yep, for sure. I mean, I think it's probably a lot easier, and that's probably, you know, it's almost a business model probably for some malware authors to find companies they can take over at little or no cost and launch their malware there. I mean, it's certainly, I would expect it to be harder to infect approved apps that are, you know, legitimate and that people should have some kind of security measures on. Or I don't know if Google Play Store forces you to have some kind of contract that says you will test your apps for malware. That would be a good idea, but no, I don't think so.
Well, they have a developer vetting process where they say they vet apps, and it's just like how Apple does. My opinion is that Apple does a lot more vetting than Google does. I mean, Apple's kind of known for obviously their walled garden, and they take a very strict stance of what gets put into the App Store, a little more so than Google, which is why we see more of these problems on Android, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Kevin.
Why are you sorry, Kevin? I didn't build.
Well, you have an Android, so, you know.
I do. I like it.
I know you do. Yes.
So the bottom line is, I think you should only load apps that can be verifiably trustworthy in some way, like get a reference from somebody who's used it or find some reputable reviews. At least then you can have some faith that the original app itself is trustworthy. But stop using them if you don't need them. Obviously, if you got a bunch of old apps that are kicking around, you know, that may not be maintained anymore, you shouldn't have them running on your device. But if the app gets bought out, you may not even know when it could suddenly become malicious, or if there is that sort of supply chain infection. So there's not an awful lot you can do in that case. Agreed.
Well, yeah. And then there's the whole, you know, the whole way of identifying an app that may be malicious. So if your phone starts slowing down, you're getting overheating problems, decreased battery life, and like you said, unfamiliar apps. If all those things are happening, you know, you may want to just factory reset your device.
Sort of brings to mind the question. I haven't discussed it in a long time, but I mean, what is the state of antivirus or anti-malware on mobile devices these days?
None. I mean, you got to be careful with that because there is a lot of vendor snake oil that is out there, especially on the Apple iOS side, just because the way that Apple has designed iOS, everything is sandboxed and there is no like scanning of your applications from within the actual mobile operating system, right? There are limitations to that. Now, if you jailbreak your device, that's a whole different story. Yeah. And we've talked about that on the show before, but you know, I would be very careful with any of these third-party apps that say they protect your mobile phone from viruses. Yeah. Right. And even on Android too, right, Kevin, there isn't a lot there that you have to worry about.
That is great advice. Thanks guys. So this installment was brought to you by ClickArmor, and I'd like to invite anyone who has an interest in security awareness for business or home to join us every 2 weeks for the Cybersecurity Awareness Forum. It's a live panel discussion that we have. And just today, we had one on Security Awareness Month, which might sound weird because that's October, but you have to kind of start thinking about it ahead of time. We had over 200 people registered for that session and over 40, almost 50 people live on the call. We also record them and we put them on our YouTube channel. So you can watch it even if you aren't able to join. And that's all freely available. So really proud of how that's kind of grown. And it's just a great community of people who care about security awareness from different parts of the industry and even home home people with interests. But in that recording, you know, we actually do a transcription and we just created our summary of all the discussion points from our first quarter's cybersecurity awareness forums. There were six of them. And so we created a security awareness industry report. And it just distills all the good stuff that came out of these live sessions into, 20 or 25 page review. And you can just go through and look at what we've talked about. So you can get that report from last quarter's session right now at clickarmor.ca. And there'll be a pop-up or something you can find it at. So that's it for Aware Much.
So let's talk about America's most cyber secure companies. I'll rephrase that. So Forbes has partnered with security.
To that? Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. So Forbes has partnered with Security Scorecard to create a list of America's most secure cybersecure companies, recognizing the top 200 US-based companies with strong website security and cybersecurity infrastructure. So first of all, I just want to make a comment and say that I don't know, but it feels to me like these 200 companies may be a target now by some hackers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who may think better.
Wait. They became They became a store that you can go to and buy random stuff.
No.
What do you mean target some other way?
I mean another way, Kevin.
Oh.
Yes.
It's kind of like saying you can't sink the Titanic, right?
Yeah. Or you could say safe.
It is absolutely true. You cannot sink the Titanic.
It's already sunk.
It's already at the bottom of the ocean. I liked that, Tom. I wanted to call out that I actually spit bubbly water out when I saw your tweet that said, like, literally, not a, oh man, LOL. Said on Twitter, hey, it's the new Hacker Safe or whatever you called it, I was like, oh my God, he's right.
That was my first reaction. I mean, I don't know if it's right. I'm just saying I felt like, everybody remember the Hacker Safe badge? I mean, we're really dating ourselves because this is like old school. That was like, 2010 or something? But
2005.
But yeah, McAfee came out with this Hacker Safe badge, and McAfee was, you know, had a, what was it, like a scanner or something? Was it McAfee?
McAfee came out. I thought Hacker Safe was Hacker Safe and McAfee bought them.
Yeah, it was something. McAfee had something to do with it, but like you could get this badge if you were, you know, doing regular scans on your website, and it said you're Hacker Safe. So what happened was all these hackers were like, oh, I don't think you're safe. And then they hacked all these websites with the Hacker Safe logo. Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying.
One of the best part about it was in their documentation that if you wanted, they told you that you had to turn off any protections like web app firewalls and stuff like that for their scanner. And in their documentation, they told you that the right way to do it was to add a string. And I'm blanking on a string. Was it scan alert?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You added this string in the referrer field. User agent. And that, so like my burp config forever was just to add that alert. String. Like it was just like, what is wrong with you people?
Yeah.
I had a customer, but this is back when I was at InGuardians, and that's how I know it was before 2010. We had a customer that they came to us and they're like, we don't know what to do. We're being told that we have all these vulnerabilities. We got compromised, but we have Hacker Safe and it's telling us we have no problems and everything else like this. And we looked at it. We're like, okay, yeah, sure, man, we'll look at it. And we started looking at the setup. And it turned out that what they were doing was they had given Hacker Safe their IP address, but they were on a name-based hosting. So the IP address, all you got was the Apache page. It worked. You know the page, right?
Yep.
So Hacker Safe was literally scanning that page.
It worked.
Marking it safe. And they were putting the badge on their website. But so to me, I have a number of issues with this top 200. And I'm not even going to get into the, are they really, like okay. The article says, well, you know, they haven't had a breach since 2020 or something like that.
22.
Yeah. But let's be clear. What you mean is they haven't discovered a breach since 2022, right? Whatever that is, right? Like, but here is my core issue. I want to question Security Scoreboard and Forbes's ethics of doxing every CISO.
That's what I'm saying. 20, they actually put 200. CISO names in there.
Yeah. Like, hey, here's like, contact. You want to talk to this guy or this woman or this person or whatever,
like,
right?
Phishing. And, I'm thinking like all kinds of stuff now. Like,
and my understanding, I've had at least two organizations that I know that have verified with me that they did not pay for this list. Because Forbes, Secure Ideas was on like the Forbes fastest growing or something like that. And you had to pay an application fee, and then they vetted some stuff. And then everything after that was, oh, by the way, would you like a copy of your award? That's $500. Would you like a frame?
Pay to play rewards. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, of course. But I will say it wasn't the traditional pay to play in regards to, like, I've gotten those, like, would you like to be the top 10 vulnerability assessment companies? Pay us $10,000 and you're number one, right? This, they actually, we had to qualify, we had to actually meet the data. That doesn't make it okay. I want to be very clear. I'm not, but my understanding from talking to people, they did not pay to be on this list, nor, and this is the more important one in my mind, they were not asked if they want to be on this list.
This is terrible.
Right?
Wow.
And then we go into the ethics of Security Scoreboard. The Security Scoreboard system scans random sites on the internet and reports security scores. And they're doing stuff like vulnerability assessments. Now, I'm not talking about...
It's a gray area.
I crawled your website. See, I don't think it's a gray area. I think the minute you do something that tries to trigger a vulnerability to detect it, you have crossed a line. Notice I did not say that you've crossed a legality line. If you're testing whether or not I'm vulnerable to something and you have not asked me if I'm okay, I'm not talking about I'm okay with port scanning. I'm okay with I browsed your website and saw that you're using jQuery 1 and that's got vulnerabilities. But the minute you send packets specifically designed to discover a vulnerability, I believe you have crossed an ethical line.
Yeah. With that would, I assume that would also include things like URL injection, right? Just changing a URL to try and get access to a page you shouldn't be.
I feel like you added an intent. If I'm trying to bypass a control, I've crossed a line.
Well, why? Yeah, why would I alter a URL if I wasn't trying to?
I don't have any issue with.
Yeah,
I have a URL that says, you know, order ID equals 12, and I change that to 11 to see what happens.
Yeah, what if it's customer ID equals 150, and I say, what happens if I do 151?
Yeah, I think that you start to get to a line that there is where I say there's a gray area. I'll agree with Tom on that. I think though, when you're sending packets explicitly designed, we know that there's this Barracuda email filtering vulnerability and this payload triggers it, and we do that. The minute you cross that line, you crossed a line that caused my SOC to alert. You caused my security team to
costing
do
something. Money. Yeah.
Right. You've crossed a line. And my understanding is Security Scoreboard does that. So what we have here is an organization, Forbes, that has decided that it's okay to partner with another organization, Security Scoreboard. And let's be very clear, we don't know this for a fact, but I guarantee you Security Scoreboard has paid for the right to have this article published.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they've partnered with this organization that does something that in my mind is unethical. And then Forbes took that unethical activity and then published data without getting permission. And I know the argument, who the CISO of these 200 companies is probably public record, that if I dig into it,
you get to go on LinkedIn and probably find it. Yeah.
Right. I get that. But Forbes is making money from this list. You go to the site, there's advertising. They're publishing the magazine. They're using those people's data to promote Forbes and Security Scoreboard, not the company that's there. I think that's unethical. I think it's disgusting. It's not as bad as, you know, giving out camera access to every employee in your organization. Right. But I think it's bad. And I think that we as an industry should stop supporting this type of crap.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think it should have been done without permission. I mean, there's probably a twist on it. It might have costed a bit more to do, but, you know, to actually approach companies that, you know, they found to be somewhat, you know,
I would argue, and this is a piece of information you might not know, it wouldn't have cost that much extra because every single person who has verified with me that they did not ask or pay to be on the list, they did acknowledge they are existing Security Scoreboard customers.
Right. Mm, right.
So Security Scoreboard already had access to a contact
that
could have said, hey, you come to me, Scott, you come to me and say, hey, Kevin, I got this thing I want to do. It's a white paper, a case study.
Did you opt in or not?
Be okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Done. Yeah. No problem. Yeah. Let's do it. But don't just publish something about Kevin and his company that is supposedly good. You want to do an expose about that illegal fraud we did? I don't know, 37 counts of storing classified documents in my bathroom. I don't know. just a random, you know, made up example. But that's one thing. But if you want to actually use me as your advertising, I think you should ask me. That's my opinion.
I agree.
Yeah. Crazy. Like I said, my opinion, I agree with you, Kevin, completely. But I also believe that these companies, unfortunately, put a target on their back, which I do
that
have a problem with, because I hate so much when I see these vendors or these news articles saying 100% secure, unhackable, this stuff it's wrong. Yep. And everything is hackable, and you shouldn't just go around saying you're one of the most secure companies in America. I'm sorry.
I guess it could have been worse.
Just, you're a target.
Yeah. I can think of how it could have been a lot worse. They say it's for at least $1 billion in revenue, companies that were $1 billion in revenue, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if they had done this for companies that, you know, had, you know, 20 million in revenue. They had no security budget and now they're a target.
Well, let's go one step further. I can make it even worse.
Okay.
Here's our top 200. And our bottom 200.
Ooh, here's the least secure company.
Least secure. These are the companies you don't want to do business with.
I'm a hacker. Awesome. Oh, and make some
money.
Don't
give them ideas, Kevin.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't have to give them that idea.
Don't give the bad guys ideas.
You know they had that idea.
Well, I think this is a great time to end the podcast on that note.
Yes.
So, thank you both for the colorful commentary.
Was that a reference to my shirt? Hey, I'm very proud of this shirt.
Hey.
And yeah. Well, you should be.
See what I did there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, but for all of you, we will talk again next week. Thanks for listening or watching. If you like this episode, please share it with friends and colleagues and subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app. To catch all the latest from the podcast, visit us at sharedsecurity.net. Follow us on Mastodon at Shared Security, on Twitter at SharedSec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit.